Greetings, this is Jeff Riddle, pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. This is another in this occasional series of readings from and brief notes and commentary upon Eusebius of Caesarea's The Ecclesiastical History. Here is Book 9 and Chapter 1. The recantation of the imperial will set forth above was promulgated, broadcast, throughout Asia and in the neighboring provinces. After this had been thus done, Maximin, the tyrant of the East, a monster of impiety, if ever there was one, who had been the bitterest enemy of piety toward the God of the universe, was by no means pleased with what was written, and instead of making known the letters set forth above, gave verbal commands to the rulers under him to relax the war against us. For, since he might not otherwise gainsay the judgment of his superiors, he put in a corner the law set forth above, and, taking measures how it might never see the light of day in the districts under him, by an oral direction he commanded the rulers under him to relax the persecution against us. And they intimated to each other in writing the terms of the order. Sabinus, for instance, whom they had honored with the rank of most excellent prefect, made known the emperor's decision to the provincial governors in a Latin epistle. The translation of the same runs as follows. With the most earnest and devoted zeal, the divinity of our most divine masters, the emperors, has for a long time to determine to lead all men's thoughts into the holy and right path of life, so that those also who seem to follow customs foreign to the Romans should perform the acts of worship due to the immortal gods. But the obstinacy and most unyielding determination of some was carried to such a length that neither could they be turned back from their own purpose by just reasoning embodied in the order, nor did they fear the punishment that threatened. Since, therefore, it has come about that many by such conduct endanger themselves in accordance with the noble piety that is theirs, the divinity of our masters, the most mighty emperors, deeming it foreign to their divine purpose that for such a reason they should so greatly endanger these men, gave commandment through my devotedness to write to thy intelligence, that if any of the Christians be found following the religion of his nation, thou shouldst set him free from molestation directed against him and from danger, nor shouldst thou deem any one punishable on this charge, since so long a passage of time has proved that they can in no wise be persuaded to abandon such obstinate conduct. Let it be thy solicitude's duty, therefore, to write to the curators and to the duumvirs and the magistrates of the districts of every city, that they may know that it is not beseeming for them to take any further notice of that letter. Whereupon the rulers of the provinces, having concluded that the purport of what had been written to them was a genuine expression, made known by means of letters the imperial resolve to curators, duumvirs, and rural magistrates. And not only did they further these measures by writing, but also much more so by action. With a view to carrying out the imperial will, as many as they kept shut up in prisons for their confession of the deity, they brought into the light of day and set free, releasing such of these same persons as were consigned to the mines for punishment. For this, in truth, they mistakenly conceived to be the emperor's wish. And when these things had thus been carried into effect, as though some light shine forth all at once out of a gloomy night, one might see churches thronged in every city and crowded assemblies, and the rites performed thereat in the customary manner. And every single one of the unbelieving heathen was in no small degree amazed at these happenings, marveling at the miracle of so great a change, and extolling the Christian's God as alone great and true. Of our own people, those who had faithfully and bravely contended throughout the conflict of persecutions once more resumed their confident bearing in the sight of all. But those whose faith had been diseased and souls storm-tossed eagerly strove for their own healing, beseeching and begging the strong for the right hand of safety, and supplicating God to be merciful to them. And then also the noble champions of godliness, freed from their evil plight in the mines, returned to their own homes. Proudly and joyously they went through every city, full of unspeakable mirth and boldness that cannot even be expressed in words. Yea, thronging crowds of men went on their journey, praising God in the midst of the thoroughfares and marketplaces with songs and psalms. And you might see those who shortly before had been prisoners, undergoing the harshest punishment, and driven from their native lands, now regaining with gay and joyful countenance, with gay and joyful countenance, their own hearts, so that even those who formerly were thirsting for our blood, seeing the wondrous thing contrary to all expectation, rejoiced with us at what had happened. Here ends Book 9 and Chapter 1. This opening chapter of Book 9 describes the initial joy among Christians that met the announcement of the ending of the Diocletian persecution. Eusebius begins that by noting that Maximin, who has previously been described as the tyrant of the East and is here described as a monster of impiety, was not pleased with the order, but only begrudgingly complied with it. He did not publish, in fact, the emperor's decree directly, but only shared the news about it orally to his leaders, and then they transmitted the news to the various provinces. An epistle translated from its original Latin from one of these officials who was under the tyrant, a prefect named Sabinus. This epistle is cited in which it is announced that the emperors had decided that the Christians were to be free from molestation and from danger. Christians were then released from prisons and from the mines where they had been serving. The churches were thronged in every city, says Eusebius, with large assemblies. And at this, he says, all the pagans marveled and many even extolled the God of the Christians to be true. Those who had remained faithful during the time of persecution continued in the same confidence they had had before they had been arrested and thrown into prison. Those who had wavered during the persecution, on the other hand, eagerly strove for their own healing. It is especially noted that the noble champions of godliness, who had been in the mines, returned to their homes proudly and joyously. Crowds of men passed through the streets and marketplaces, praising God with songs and psalms. And even those pagans who had persecuted the believers rejoiced with them. In conclusion, Eusebius provides here an effusive description of the joy with which the Christians celebrated the end of the Diocletian persecution. And he also notes the impact and the witness that this had upon their pagan neighbors. The remaining antipathy, however, of the tyrant Maximin toward Christians indicates the fact that there were still those in the Roman Empire who were hostile against the Christians, and this foreshadows opposition that was still to come for the believers. Well, this brings this episode to a conclusion. I hope this has been helpful for those who are listening, and I will look forward to speaking to you in the next episode.